Good morning. You're listening to The Beacon. How are ya, Brian Hawkins?
I'm doing fine. How are you, Lainey?
I'm good. I'm fighting a little bit of a cold.
Yeah, I noticed you still have that cough thing going on.
Boy, it's right in the chest, too. And I'll tell you what, I have been bragging for how long about how I just don't get sick anymore because I'm so healthy and I do yoga all the time. Well, guess what?
My streak
has come to an end.
What do you usually take for it?
Well, I've been taking Theraflu. This round, Theraflu and ibuprofen, basically. And it's helped. I mean, it gets me through the day because by the end, Tuesday night, I was dead in the water. Like, I couldn't move. I had a fever. I had a sore throat. My entire body felt like it weighed 3,000 pounds. Like, I was just sick. And I was at my yoga teacher training that night, and I came home, and I was like, well, I can't.
Yoga didn't knock it out?
We were having an anatomy lecture, so we weren't actually.
They cover anatomy in yoga?
Yeah. Oh. Yes, they sure do.
You know, I saw this one pose for urinary incontinence.
Oh, my.
It's called the ladder? No.
I don't know the ladder.
Oh, I can't remember, but it's where you're standing and you're going like that or something.
Was it standing tree?
Something like that.
I'll have to look into that. Urinary incontinence. Well,
yeah.
There you go. We'll check it out on the break and report back.
What I want to tell you, since you're sick, what you should do.
Yes.
And I did this once and it worked, is you should bombard your weary body with juice.
Really? What kind of juice?
Carrot juice, any kind of freshly
squeezed
juice.
Get that vitamin C and antioxidants in
there.
Yeah,
and do all of that. Just keep drinking juices, and that'll knock it out. I did that once. I was sick, and I felt a lot better afterwards. Also, oil of oregano. Have you heard me say that before? I told Luca about that a few weeks ago.
I've heard that, no. Oil of oregano.
Yes, it's a little vial that you can get. Not a vial, but it's an oil that you can get, I guess, at a health food store.
Okay.
And if you take that, and that helps you get over ailments quickly.
How do you take it? Like, what's the recommended dosage? Do you just take a teaspoon of it, or do we not know?
Yes, we do know. They have instructions on the bottle. What I have is I take one or two under the tongue with some water.
Are they pills?
No, it's drops.
Oh, okay.
It's got a little...
A little dropper?
Dropper,
In the lid? Okay. I saw you miming over there.
Yes, a little dropper, and it's a couple under the tongue or one under the tongue, a little bit of water, and that should help as well.
Okay. Yes. I'll try that.
I hate to see you suffer.
Thank you.
Now, could it be that you got sick because you were out trick-or-treating with the little ones?
Well, my son had been sick,
And
he was finally diagnosed with a sinus infection. I don't feel like I've got that. I just feel kind of like this general malaise of, like my body just is heavy, and I only had a fever that one night, But yeah, like pretty typical flu stuff. So, I don't know. It was bound to happen eventually. So, might as well get it out of the way. I mean, I don't feel totally knocked down. But, again, the Theraflu and the ibuprofen might be helping me through the day. Yeah. By the end of the day, I'm pretty well knocked out again.
You know, I used to take those over-the-counter things. And sometimes I would try to be smart. And when I feel something coming on, I would take it. And then that would just bring it on even more. So,
really?
I have to find a different route. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I won't say which one I took. Okay. Corseden. But...
We won't tell anybody.
But yeah, it would make me sick faster.
Wow.
But that's been years ago.
Okay.
But you know, I'd like to see pictures of the little ones in there.
The kids from Halloween.
Yeah, we talked about it. Especially what was TJ again?
He was Tamatoa from Moana.
Yeah, I don't
know.
No
idea.
Tamatoa. So
yeah.
I'd like to see what that's like.
I will post some pictures on our newly revamped and revised and reinvigorated Facebook page.
That is great.
Yes, last week we were talking about how I lost access to it, and I somehow figured out how to regain access to it. So we're back. running on Facebook at Lighthouse Beacon. You can find us and we'll post all the pertinent information there. So yes, TJ was Tamatoa, and we went trick-or-treating for about 20 minutes and then he was done. Mm-hmm. It was cold and he just wasn't into it. And it was actually the same thing last year, although last year was really comfortable outside. I remember it was a really comfortable Halloween last year, but this year it was pretty brutal.
Lots of candy and...
No. I mean, we went to like six houses and then he was like, I'm cold, I want to go home. So I was like, all right.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, which is actually good for me because I'm a total candy stealer. So especially to the five-year-old, because my daughter would absolutely notice. But my son, like, he has no concept. So I would take advantage of that and take all the good candy. And so at least now my options are very limited. So it helps me have a little more self-control.
And you know, we forgot to mention that today is the first show back on Saturday.
Saturdays. That's right. Saturday, 7 a.m. We've been on Sundays for the last couple months, and Now we're back on Saturdays.
So turn on the beacon. That's our new catchphrase.
Turn on the beacon.
Yeah.
I like it. Very creative. Very outside the box.
Right. And so speaking of turning us on, the whole reason that we're here today is that we've got, I think, a pretty great show.
Of course we do.
Of course.
Please. Who are you talking to?
Yeah, Maggie Daly Skogsbakken. Does that name ring a bell at all?
Well, the Maggie Daly does, because, of course, I initially was like, Maggie Daly, she passed away a few years ago. And,
yes,
of course, it's a different Maggie Daly. So, yes, the name rings a bell. She's mm-hmm. been on our show before.
Yes, and she'll be on to talk about Paces Paratransit on-time performance. Remember, there was a survey that was done by Access Living, and they sort of criticized the on-time performance.
Mm-hmm.
And for folks who didn't catch Sandra Murillo's interview, you can hear that online at chicagolighthouse.org/radio. And just go to the podcast section, and you'll be able to hear the Access Living side of the story.
And that's from last week's show. Yeah.
And what we're going to have today is paratransit or PACE's response.
So we'll get the other side of the story.
Yeah. So, and then she talks about it. So
cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's nice. It's nice to have both sides of the story. And you know, sometimes it's good to have like the whole picture before we rush to judgment. So I'm glad mm-hmm. that she's here to talk to us about that. And then go ahead.
No, you.
Oh, I will be here with Let Us Turnip the Beat.
Mm.
We are actually, should I say it? That we're phasing it out?
Well, you know how things are in radio and television. You have an idea and you work it, and then you have another idea.
Right. That's very well put.
And so what we're just talking about doing with that, folks, you've been listening to Lainey's recipes, and we'd like to hear yours. And you could, if you follow us and like us on the Lighthouse Beacon
Facebook page.
Yeah, Facebook page. You can put your recipes there, and we will share them on the air from time to time. And we're going to do it that way. But the good news is we're going to come up with another feature to intrigue
and entice
all
of you all.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So we're going to phase out the traditional, what we're familiar with of Let Us Turn Up the Beat and sort
just
of...
Just when I'm starting to learn how to say it.
Yeah. That's true. I don't think you actually messed it up today.
Mm.
Good for you. Sorry, guy.
Okay.
Sorry. So it'll be more of a crowd-sponsored feature at this point. And then we'll replace it with something that we've got in the works. We'll announce it in the next week or two.
Mm-hmm.
And then after Let Us Turn Up the Beat, we've got our Luke's Laboratory. So we'll be checking in with Mr. Luke about what's going on in his mad scientist laboratory. And I think that will then do it.
That'll be...
for the day.
Right.
Yeah, that'll do it.
All those things.
Yep.
The Lighthouse Endowment Campaign is an ongoing campaign to help secure the future of the Chicago Lighthouse for the 67,000-plus patients, clients, and families that utilize our services each year.
Yeah, I have an undergrad from DePaul Computer Information Systems and a master's in business information technology. And I know I have a disability, and it can be challenging trying to get a position. You know, they want to hire someone with a disability. So that was one of the challenges I had also. Going to a job interview and people look at you strange because you have a disability. I've gotten frowned at. They'll say, we'll call you or we'll consider, but it never happened. The Lighthouse has provided me with employment. I've been here since 2013, November. I've grown. I transitioned from Illinois Tollway to UI Health. The Lighthouse is awesome. They really work with people with disability, visually impaired, and veterans, get employment, you know, find employment, because the percentage of people with disability is unemployed is extremely high. People that have degrees and they still can't find a job. So the Lighthouse is very supportive in helping them find employment. One word, I say awesome.
Historically, our endowment fund has helped maintain critical programs on the verge of shutting down, preserve jobs in times of economic stress, and meet the growing demand for vision care services among America's aging population. To make a contribution, please contact Jennifer Miller, 312-997-3643.
Well, you know, everyone, and a very alarming statistic is that only about 6 out of 10 students who are blind or visually impaired graduate from college. And a lot of programs are working to change that statistic and improve the outcome for college students with vision impairments. One of these programs is the College Success Program at the Perkins School for the Blind. And today, joining us to talk more about the program is Kate Cadillac. Kate, did I get your last name right?
You did. Well done.
Great. Thank you so much. Well, thanks for joining us today, bright and early on a Saturday morning here on the Beacon.
Of course. I'm glad to be with you.
Can you share a little bit of background about yourself and what you do with the College Success Program?
Absolutely. So I'm the Assistant Director of College Success at Perkins. Mm-hmm. Before my existing role, I've been teaching for about 5 years, three of which were here at Perkins.
Sure.
At Perkins, I taught high school students primarily in the STEM field, so science, technology, no engineering, but I did teach quite a bit of math as well. And then also some classes in the expanded core curriculum, and that's a set of skills that have been identified as crucial for individuals with visual impairments to learn, mm-hmm. such as orientation, mobility, assistive technology, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I also have experience teaching in public schools as an itinerant teacher of the visually impaired. So that's a bit of my background on what I've been doing. And now, as the Assistant Director of College Success at Perkins, primarily I'm helping to develop the curriculum and get the program off the ground. So this is a really exciting time because we just launched our application a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
We're very heavily recruiting for participants, and I'm going out to conferences and networking with people and trying to get the word out about the program.
Oh, very much so. And earlier you mentioned, being an itinerant teacher for the public schools, and as a lot of our listeners might know, I myself am a person with vision loss, and it's during our last keynote speech for our Lighthouse Scholarship ceremonies, something that I told the students is that, you know, once they get to college, you know, the TBI is no longer there to support them. You know, like
exactly.
I told them, you've heard the rumors and they are true. And
right.
I know that this is where the College Success Program comes into play. Can you tell us a little more?
You are absolutely correct. And I also want to mention that I, too, am someone who is visually impaired.
Mm-hmm.
I've been totally blind since about the age of 15.
Sure.
So shortly after losing my vision, I had to start thinking about going to college.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition to my, you know, professional interests, I have a strong passion personally for enabling students who are visually impaired to make that transition to college and ultimately be successful adults.
Absolutely.
So in College Success at Perkins, our main objective is to, as the name implies, prepare students with the skills they need to reach that 2 or 4 year degree.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of things that are involved in that. There are some existing programs that have a similar mission, but from our research, we found that these programs they're much shorter in time. Some of them are only a matter of weeks, mm-hmm. whereas our program is a 9-month residential program.
Sure.
So we are aiming for participants between the ages of 18 and 22, college-bound students who maybe are in their senior year of high school, thinking about whether they are going to go to college now or whether they need a transition year. But our program is also for students who have started college and they realize that they might need a little bit more support with learning, you know, some of those decision-making and problem-solving skills or the academic support, orientation mobility, assistive technology, the list goes on, but there's so many reasons why students might need some extra support. So that's what our program is here to do. And because we're located in the greater Boston area, as you probably know, we are a hub for colleges.
Oh, very much so.
Absolutely. So we're very ideally located to have such a program. We're fortunate that we're going to be partnering with universities. Our students will have many opportunities to go onto college campuses and, you know, start taking classes and begin those things that might frighten them or start doing the things that, as you said, teachers of visually impaired have done for students in the past. Like when a student's in high school and they need something put into Braille, it just appears on their desk when they need it because their TVI takes
exactly.
care of it for them.
Mm-hmm.
When in college, that's not the case. They have to advocate. They have to request the accommodations that they need. And sometimes they even need to put things in Braille themselves. So, you know, equipping students with those skills, getting them ready for the types of situations they might encounter is all what we're about.
So now, you know, it sounds like this is a very immersive experience for the students. So do they actually stay in dorms or department? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so on campus at Perkins, I should mention, if you haven't been, you should visit. Our campus is so beautiful. We have a lot of land and people are always coming and commenting on the architecture. We have a beautiful pond. Just the landscaping is so nice. And you come here and it's really a community. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a set of dorms on campus that were recently renovated. Mm-hmm. Students in the College Success Program will reside in those dorms and have access to the many public transportation options available in this area, and I already mentioned our proximity to Boston. It's just about 20 minutes to get into Boston, where, of course, all the universities are located. We do have some in Watertown, which is where Perkins campus is located as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm assuming that in the, you know, dorms, they practice all the independent living skills, you know, because in college, not only do you have to worry about the academic aspect of it, but also of the independent living, you know, cooking meals, cleaning and organizing your apartment, all of that stuff that, you know, sighted students have to worry about as well.
Certainly. So that's why our residential piece is so very important and special, I think, because mm-hmm. not all transition programs offer that. And we think it's very important that, as you said, students get practice in, you know, not only just learning the independent living skills, which they certainly will have opportunities to do while part of the program. They'll be cooking and cleaning, but also to have an opportunity to live with others
mm-hmm.
and to kind of get the experience of being in a dorm and, you know, maybe sharing common spaces
Absolutely.
With other people, with same-aged peers. That's a really valuable experience for students before they head to college, and there's so many other variables to consider.
Oh, absolutely. Now, who is eligible for the College Success Program?
We are recruiting students, again, between the ages of 18 and 22, mm-hmm. students who are college-bound with visual impairments, students who have graduated high school, so maybe they just graduated, or they're in their senior year and they're going to be graduating in the spring of 2018, or they've started college already, maybe they're in their freshman year and they're having a difficult time and they decide that they want to take a step back, continue to take classes through our program, but they want some additional support.
Mm-hmm.
So in summary, we are going to recruit up to 15 students Spaces are limited, so get your applications in now. We're expecting to have a full house.
And what is the application process like for people who might be interested?
Good question. Our application is live. It can be found on our website at www.perkins.org/college. And the application should be submitted simultaneously with an application to college. So meaning students who will be eligible for some at least state funding options will want to apply to college, apply to our program, and then they will defer their acceptance into the college. So they are with us for those 9 months, and then they, you know, with the intention of going to college after the transition year, a college success.
And now, when is the application? Is there a deadline?
There is. So we have two priority deadlines. Priority one is December 1st. Students who get their applications in by then will hear word by January 15th. Our second priority deadline is February 1st, and students will hear back from us by March 15th if they get their applications in by then.
Now, for those students that are accepted into the program, when does the program itself begin? Is there a date that it begins at?
It will begin in late August of 2018.
Okay.
Which is, you know, makes sense because that's when universities are starting up.
Exactly.
And as I said, yeah, as part of this program, students will actually be taking classes, so they'll be earning those college credits. They'll be taking online classes as well as classes on campuses.
Oh, wow, that's wonderful. It's a full experience then. You can't ask for anything better than that. Yeah. So how can students contact you, or how can they get more information?
Well, by visiting our website, again, at www.perkins.org/college. I'll also give my email address, which is kate.cadillac@perkins.org, and that's spelled kate.cadillac@perkins.org.
Well, great. Well, Kate, is there anything else that you would like to add?
I'm just really excited about getting the program off the ground. I think that, you know, this is a first of its kind type of program, and I think it really has potential to make a big impact, and I can't wait to get started with it.
Very much so, and it's a very important program, you know, as I said at the beginning, to help, as the name says, help students succeed in college, if you will.
That's right. Well, thank you so much. This has been wonderful.
Thank you. And for anyone that would like more information about the program, you can go to www.perkins.org/college. Well, Kate, thank you so much for your time, and best of luck to you and the whole Perkins team.
Thank you very much.
Great. Well, everyone, this is The Beacon. We'll be right back.
This is Coach Mike Ditka. I'm asking you to support my friends at the Chicago Lighthouse, who are providing critical educational services to children who are blind, visually impaired, or multi-disabled. Through its innovative preschool, Birth to Three, and other cutting-edge programs, the Lighthouse is making a big difference in the lives of these children.
This is Dr. Janet Slick, President and CEO of the Chicago Lighthouse. These are exciting times here at the Chicago Lighthouse. We're celebrating 110 years of changing lives in 2016. The Chicago Lighthouse provides a community of comprehensive care for people who are blind, visually impaired, disabled, and veterans. To find out how you can help, call 312-997-3675 or visit us at chicagolighthouse.org.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Brett Shishkoff.
And I am Sandy Murillo.
And you are listening to the Lighthouse Beacon. You actually had an experience that you kind of want to share.
Speaking of new experiences,
yes.
Yeah. So I recently ventured out, as I love to do, taking new adventures, mm-hmm. and I went to the opera here at the Lyric Opera House here at Chicago. And speaking of names, I went to see Orfei et Eurydice.
Excellent. Okay.
That's popular opera slash based on the Greek mythology.
Mm-hmm.
So it, you know, it was an interesting. And what was different and interesting for me about it is that, well, first of all, it was my first opera ever.
Mm-hmm.
But it had audio description. As you know, Brett, the folks at the Lyric Opera, they are, you know, they go above and beyond.
Oh, yeah,
their
definitely.
Audio descriptions, mm-hmm. their touch tours. Martin Wilde, who is well known here in the audio description area here in Chicago, mm-hmm. he was actually describing the opera. And, you know, obviously I won't share any spoilers here, but the touch tour, you know, it was, you know, being able to feel the different costumes, the different props that, you know, they used. That was, you know, I'd been in touch tours before, and mm-hmm. they've always exceeded my expectations in the way that, you know, I'm able to get a better picture, if you will, of the, you know, what'll be used in the play or performance. And now the audio description, Brett, you know, as I said, this is an opera combined with ballet, so it's a, you know, kind of a unique experience. So I can say that the audio description was, you know, so important in this case. I think that
mm-hmm.
if you ever go to an opera and you can't see, you know, some people might prefer not to use audio description in regular mm-hmm. plays.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's totally up to the person. But I really do feel, Brett, that if you're going to go to the opera, you have to have that audio description, you know.
Most definitely. I definitely think when you're dealing with most operas, almost 95% of them, if mm-hmm. not more, are in another language.
Yes.
So unless you speak that specific the language that the opera is in, then you will be lost on what they're talking about.
And this particular opera, Brett, it was in French, so mm-hmm. and I personally don't know any French. So.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, their season is basically, it's shorter, so they only do the opera during, like, the fall and winter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so it ends up, you will have audio description at the opera more frequently because they're actually maybe two or three within a month or two period
yeah.
of time.
Yeah.
So it ends up, they only do one performance of that specific opera. But mm-hmm. you do have other opportunities maybe a week or two later to go see another one.
Exactly.
And they do a wide variety of operas, different lengths. Some of them can be really, really long. So if you have never gone, definitely try and see what the runtime is. Start with a shorter one, mm-hmm. and then you can work your way up to the longer ones, which could end up being 5 hours long, which is a lot for you to sit through. So just start off small and work your way up.
Like I did, this mm-hmm. was about 2.5 hours.
Yep, that is definitely for opera, the shorter end of the opera spectrum, for sure.
Now, how about you? What have you been up to? Have you seen or are you about to see any performances?
I actually went a couple weeks ago to see Fun Home at Victory Gardens, which is actually... it's based off a graphic novel, and so the audio description and touch tour was really done well.
Sure.
Once again, I've been to Victory Gardens. That was my second time being there.
Sure.
And basically the story is based around a girl. She is grown up, and she's looking back at her life
uh-huh.
at the funeral home that her family actually owns and takes care of.
Huh.
And so it ends up that she's realizing that these things that happened when she was younger really affected the person that she was now being in her 40s.
Sure.
She looks back at her childhood around the age of 10, mm-hmm. and then also you have flashbacks of her in college,
mm.
and she is a lesbian, and so she kind of starts to realize that her dad was also homosexual.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of talks about sexuality quite a bit and how that affects specific people, and so it's very heart-wrenching at parts. It was a musical,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, it definitely is, you know, there were funny parts in there, but there were also some parts that could pull on the heartstrings. So I had a really good experience there. They do very good job at Victory Gardens. Most of the time, their performances that I've gone to for touch tour and audio description also has open captioning.
Okay.
So it doesn't matter if you are blind, visually impaired, or even if you're deaf, you could be able to enjoy the experiences there. And they also do offer, if you have somebody who's on the autistic spectrum, they have sensory friendly performances as well there.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So yeah, it's been a really good experience, and I have a few more that I'm going to be going to here in November.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll keep you guys updated on how those are turning out. And I believe we have another segment coming up, don't we, there, Sandy?
We actually do, Brett. A lot of our listeners might recall the interview I did last week with Robert Zimmerman from Access Living.
Mm-hmm.
Regarding our recent report on paratransit's performance.
Mm-hmm.
And this week, we're actually doing a follow-up interview with Maggie Daly Skogsbakken.
Well done.
Thank you, Brett.
You're welcome. Why don't we get right into that interview and hear what she has to say?
Last week, the Access Living Organization released a study that characterized PACE's paratransit program for the disabled as unacceptably poor. Maggie Daly Skogsbakken, PACE's media relations manager and a frequent contributor to this program, joins us to talk about PACE's paratransit on-time performance. Maggie, welcome back.
Hi, Brian. Glad to be here. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for coming on to talk about this.
Absolutely.
When we talked initially, you needed a bit of time to give the report by Access Living a once-over. I hope you had time to do that.
Well, we've given it the once-over. We definitely need to, you know, it's 63 pages, I think. There's a lot of information there. So a once-over is not going to quite do it. But yeah, we were able to review it at least, you know, give it a once-over and try and find some insights and of how we can improve our service and what their concerns are, for sure.
I know that the Federal Transit Administration conducted a review of the paratransit program, and I want to ask you about that. But first, how does PACE respond to the charge by Access Living that PACE's on-time performance is unacceptably poor and that PACE's system for monitoring on-time performance is not accurate?
Yeah, we received, like you said, we received the report on October 23rd, when they released it to the press. And we were a little surprised by that because we talk with them regularly. We work with our customers regularly to address concerns, explain what we do, what their expectations are, and what our role is and what our charge is. We have two ADA committees, one in the city and one in the suburbs, that meet regularly, and we're there. And we have a lot of partners with workshops and other organizations that represent people with disabilities, and we need that feedback, and we appreciate it. As far as the Access Living report, we definitely appreciate all the work they put into collecting the data they presented. It was a lot of work, and we appreciate their efforts. However, we don't think a sample of 186 trips, the majority surveyed in a highly congested area of downtown during rush hour, is representative of our entire system or the service we provide. We deliver between 16,000 and 20,000 trips a day and 4 million trips annually. And we openly admit that about 10% of those are going to be late every day. We have a 90% overall on-time performance rate, which we are pretty proud of. And if you look at other systems throughout the nation, that's a pretty impressive number, especially when we have a 20-minute window. So the 20-minute window means the trip can arrive within 20 minutes of the scheduled time and still be considered on time, because we're not dealing with a fixed roadway. We're dealing with the same traffic conditions as everybody else. So we want to have realistic expectations put on the service. But even with that, like those, that 20-minute window is self-imposed. Most systems have a 30-minute window. The 95% goal of on time that we have is our own goal. That's, you know, we have these high standards. Those aren't put on us by, you know, any governance. So we are striving to always be better. And even with those, what I consider impressive numbers, Absolutely, we can do better, and we're working to do that.
One problem that was pointed out in the Access Living report was that the GPS systems in the paratransit vehicles don't report arrival times. They're calculated manually by the drivers. Is that something that's causing a discrepancy in the on-time arrival percentages between Access Living and PACES studies?
Sure, and that's not 100% accurate as far as my understanding. So we use a combination. Yes, they hit a button. The operator hits a button called a trip perform button when they arrive at the location. We also use GPS. We don't rely solely on it to monitor our system because it goes out, especially in highly congested areas. So we use a combination of those things to monitor our system, to try and identify patterns. And we use the GPS as much as we can, but like I said, it fails. So we definitely look at the GPS and the manual entries if someone complains or reports a late trip, which we encourage everyone to do. Like I said, there's 20,000 trips a day. Like we're not looking at every single individual trip. That's simply impossible. But we do have a system. And earlier this year, Susan Lamagneau from CBS graciously took the time and came to our offices to view our real-time screens that use the GPS. And it shows that we are real-time monitoring stuff, especially in areas we know are having congestion, to try and address late issues as they're happening by, you know, changing certain manifests or moving trips to other vehicles. But it's not an infallible system. We can't control the roadway, weather, other human factors that slow down service. And like I said, we're dealing with the same road conditions as everyone else. So the GPS thing, I need to know a little bit more about it as well. But my understanding is that their assertion that it's not linked to anything is not quite accurate. We don't rely on it solely, and the operators do have a button that they push. However, they're going through multiple trips a day, and I can't believe that it's likely that fraudulent key entries would go unnoticed throughout a day of trips, you know, as the trips go on throughout the day, or that it wouldn't be noticed when service is audited. So we're pretty confident that the drivers are doing their job and hitting it when they get to the location.
Any chance the GPS systems will be upgraded so they can document arrival times?
You know, I don't know. We continually work with vendors and technology to improve our systems within our resources, of course. But if there's a better system out there and it's in our budget, absolutely we would look at it.
I don't know if you have an answer for this, but being here at the Lighthouse, I quite often hear horror stories from individuals who use the system. And just last week at our radio reading service, one of our volunteers had an interview to conduct but didn't get here because her ride didn't come. Sometimes I hear drivers miss pickups. How does that occur, someone not getting picked up?
You know, I can't speak to that situation specifically, but, you know, like we absolutely acknowledge that we're going to have 1,600 to 2,000 trips a day that aren't going to be performed the way we want them to. It's a public transportation system. It's shared ride. And that's one reason we've worked really hard to have this program that we offer in the city for AA riders called TAP. So it's the Taxi Access Program. And what it is anyone who is qualified to use ADA service also qualifies for this program, can get a TAP card and load trips on them. We reduced the cost of that trip from $5 to $3, and we extended the distance, you know, like by doing that. So when it was $5, it was only covering, you know, a $13.50 trip. And so that maybe got you a few miles, you know, for short trips. And so we reevaluated that system, and now you pay $3, and you get a value of, I believe, up to $20. So that's, you know, a 7 or 8 mile trip, and that's pretty good for like the city for short trips or sporadic trips. And that allows you to use a taxi. And with the proposed fare increase that may go in on January 1st, we are leaving that TAP fare the same. We are leaving it at $3 because we know it's a good resource. We want to encourage people to use it. And in the city of Chicago, every single cab is mandated to accept that card. You cannot be refused. So we need people to be aware of that option and use it when it makes sense. It gives them, you know, it's not a shared ride trip. It's not a trip you have to reserve the day before. It really is a great program, and we're hoping that people utilize that, especially when there's things that, you know, our regular service might not be the best fit for. So within our ADA rider guide, there's information on that. They can also just call our customer service line, and we'll mail them a brochure and help get them set up. And that's at 847-364-7223. Just hit option 0 and a customer service rep will help you.
Now, I'm curious. The Federal Transit Administration conducted a review of your service.
Yep, they do that at least triennially.
That was for only 7 days, right?
Yeah, they were here. 7 days is pretty intense for them to be here. They really dig deep.
What did they find?
So we haven't seen the final report yet, but I did get to view a draft. There are a couple findings that they want us to work on. None of them have to do with on-time performance. So it's not substantiating claims of a pattern of consistent or, you know, out-of-line performance as far as on-time performance. The last FTA review, I believe was conducted in 2014, and we had no findings in that one. And we're really proud of that. That's pretty impressive. And I think that's, you know, absolutely representative of the service we provide. The FTA comes here to make sure that we are on point, to make sure that we are complying to the ADA laws. And they found that we are.
Do you have any idea of when you'll get the final report?
Any day now is kind of what I'm being told. So they give us a draft. They have questions for us. We respond to those questions, they consider them, they might follow up again, and then they'll produce the final report once they've had a discussion with us. It's a really interactive process.
Finally, what do you say to the folks who are disgruntled about the Access Living report and about the on-time performance overall?
Yeah, we get it. We understand it, and we agree. We want to be better. And within the resources that we have and what we're charged to do, we are going to keep working toward that every day. You know, we hope people understand it's not going to be a perfect system. You know, Access Living is located on Chicago. There's no lot. There's no pull-in. There's no, you know, infrastructure for us to be able to serve them better. That said, we're still going to work on, you know, better on-time performance, better monitoring of our service, and better accountability from our vendors. One thing that we are implementing next year, pending board approval, of course, is a reimbursement of trips that are more than an hour late. And please note, that's 80 minutes, so that we're not counting the hour, that 20-minute window. So technically, it's 80 minutes from your pickup time. So if your trip is an hour late, we're going to reimburse your trip quarterly. We're going to send you vouchers or tickets so that you can use that on the service, and you're not going to pay for that trip. And hopefully that's going to encourage our vendors to work harder for us to not have to refund that money, because that's going to come out of liquidated damages that we collect from them. And we're working really hard with them. They're working hard, too. I don't want to, you know, speak to, like, or say something along the lines of they're not doing their job. They're working just as hard as we are, and we're going to continue to do that.
How can riders register their opinions, complaints to PACE?
Please do call. Please let us know what's going on. We need that input. You can call us at 847-364-7223, or you can log on to pacebus.com, and there's email options and online options to submit comments there. We also just completed 13 public hearings about our budget, where we also had staff there to accept comments that weren't about the budget, that were about service. So keep an eye out for those. Those occur every October, but they're certainly not the only time or place to give us input. We're happy to have it when and wherever people can give it to us.
Okay. We'll have to leave it there. It sounds like something that will always have to be tweaked here and there.
Absolutely. And you know, we have a great staff. I work with these people. They're fantastic. They're dedicated. They're public servants. And, you know, I hope that people give them a little bit of credit, that they really do work hard. But we're humans. It's a human system. And we don't have dedicated roadways or lanes. That, you know, that would be amazing, right? We would be able to perform so much better. But we will still work at it. And, you know, we can promise the customers that we have open ears, and we're listening, and we're reading, and we're trying to be better.
Maggie Daly-Skogsbakken, PACE's Media Relations Manager, talking about PACE's on-time performance for paratransit. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Ryan. I always appreciate your guys' time.
This is The Beacon, a service of the Chicago Lighthouse.
Today, the unemployment rate for veterans is at an all-time high, and these brave men and women need our help. To meet this challenge, Paralyzed Veterans of America created Operation PAVE, an employment assistance program for any veteran at the Hines VA in Chicago. Through a partnership with Agility DGS, these services are provided free of charge. Hiring more veterans is great for business and great for our nation. To learn more, visit OperationPAVE.org. A public service message from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
1.4 million people in Illinois really want to work but can't. If they get jobs, they could lose their Medicaid health coverage, and private insurance is difficult to obtain. This is the reality for people with disabilities. The Health Benefits for Workers with Disabilities program can help. HBWD is a state program that provides health insurance for working individuals with disabilities. Call 800-226-0768 or visit hbwdillinois.com. Don't let your disability keep you from working.
Well, we are back. After Sandy and Brett did their piece, we are back here now to move the show along even further into this hour.
I'm glad you're explaining how time proceeds. It's very helpful. Thank you.
Well, you know, I've been reading about Mr. Hawking. Not Hawkins like me, but Hawking, the really smart guy.
Not related.
No, right. And I was going to save this for later, but he is saying that artificial intelligence robots will replace humans completely.
What?
Yeah, he says this will be a new form of life.
Like, humans will no longer exist. It will be just, well, what's the point of having robots, like, roaming the earth if humans aren't here?
That is a great point. Well, I think the point of it is that they're more efficient, more controllable, less expensive. They don't get sick.
Okay, someone. Thank you. Thanks for calling me out, for busting me.
Right. So that's something to think about, folks. There was an article in The Mirror where he's talking about that. But a lot of people have said that. But you know what? I believe in human nature, and I don't think that's really going to totally happen. Because every time, if you ever go to a certain store that will remain nameless, that had recently adopted artificial intelligence to greet you at the door, I completely ignore it.
I don't know what that store is.
Well, I don't want to step on any toes.
You have to tell me off the air.
Yes.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm having a very hard time understanding what the point would be of the earth being overrun by robots if humans are no longer here.
Well, no, I think there will still be some humans, just maybe not as many. And these will be humans who are controlling everything, probably.
Oh, that's so scary.
Yeah. Well, it's a dystopian future. That's what all those movies are about, I think.
It's totally true. And, you know, with the advancements of, like, all the technologies and how fast everything is changing, how rapid, like, the evolution of all the technology is, I would actually not be surprised if we did see something like this, if not in our lifetime, then in our children's or our children's children's, like not too many generations in the future, I think we'll have to wait to see robots take over the world.
Yeah, he says that eventually someone will create artificial intelligence that will essentially outperform humans.
Yeah.
And if people design computer viruses, someone will design artificial intelligence that improves and replicates itself. So I think that's how it would begin. But we've seen that before with the Space Odyssey 2001 or whatever.
The movie?
Yeah.
Right.
But
it's clearly not grounded necessarily in real life,
but
eventually I suppose it could get there.
Yeah.
Who knows? We'll see.
Maybe. I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I think that we still serve a purpose on this earth, and we're not going to be totally replaced.
Just like Quad Sound and the beta tape, robots aren't going to take over the world.
They're not.
But in the meantime, we can rest assured that humans will survive, but the only thing that keeps us going is good food. And that brings us around to Let Us Turn Up the Beat.
Nice. Very, very good. Well, we're going to be wrapping up our Let Us Turn Up the Beat here feature, as you know it, here in the next week or two. But for right now, we're still in the midst of fall. We're still enjoying our fall delicacies, such as pumpkin. And I'm also going to talk about a Thanksgiving alternative for you non-meat eaters out there to enjoy. But first, you know what? Let's do the good stuff. Let's do the sweet stuff. We're going to do a little pumpkin ice cream.
Oh,
it's
my gosh.
Vegan, and you don't need an ice cream maker for it. So I'm going to try this because I really love. Have you heard of the banana ice cream?
Yeah.
Were you the vegan banana ice cream? So you take bananas and you peel them and slice them and then freeze them. And then once they're frozen hard, you puree them.
You just reminded me I have to take the ones I have in the freezer out.
See? You're all ready for your banana ice cream. So the banana, the frozen banana, has a consistency of ice cream, and then you add whatever you want to it. You can add chocolate chips and peanut butter and vanilla extract and all kinds of yummy stuff. So this is similar to that, whereas it's basically you just freeze it and eat it, and it has a very similar consistency to ice cream. So for your pumpkin ice cream recipe, you're going to want 1 cup of pumpkin puree, 1 teaspoon of pumpkin pie spice, and then 1/4 cup of honey or stevia, or if you're a vegan, you can use agave because vegans don't eat honey. It's 1/2 teaspoon of vanilla extract and 1 cup of the coconut cream, which if you open a can of coconut milk, at the very top, there's this cream, like this hard cream that's settled on the top. Mm-hmm. So you scrape that off. But the best is to use a full fat coconut cream. Not, they have light as well, but it doesn't, you don't get that nice creamy texture. So you take all of your ingredients and mix them together, puree them really good, and then freeze it. And once it's totally frozen, you've got yourself a nice, like, pumpkin ice cream consistency. It's like a, you know, it's a consistency of ice cream, and you've got yourself a nice pumpkin. But you're giving me a look like,
where do you get the puree from?
So you can buy it at any store, especially now with the holidays coming up, because it's what you make pumpkin pie with. So it's just, you know, it's in a can, and it has pumpkin puree on it. So just make sure you get the actual pumpkin, though, because I think there's a lot that have, you know, sweeteners added to them and whatnot. But
I'm glad you told me, or else I would have gone out and bought a pumpkin and start scraping.
No, I mean, you could. You could, if you really wanted to commit to it, you certainly could. But the easier way is to just buy it already pureed in a can.
Yes,
and it's ready to
go.
Yeah, that'll shave off like 3 hours of your time. So there you go, pumpkin ice cream. And then our meat alternative for Thanksgiving. Have you ever tried cauliflower steak?
No.
Oh, my gosh. It's so good. Do you like cauliflower?
Yeah.
Some people have a huge aversion to it. I think this is really very tasty way to eat cauliflower. And you're essentially just taking a head of cauliflower and cutting off the leaves and whatnot. So you're left with just a cauliflower head, and you chop it into two or three, like, steaks, basically. Equal size steaks across the length of the cauliflower. And, you know, what you're going to want to do is to dress it up, get 1/4 cup of olive oil, a tablespoon of fresh lemon juice, a couple cloves of garlic, and then salt and pepper. And if you like a little spice, some red peppers. And then you mix that puree or the marinade, and go ahead and preheat your oven to 400 degrees. Put the cauliflower steaks on a cookie sheet, and then brush it with olive oil. And then you're going to cook like 25 minutes on either side in the 400 degree oven. So it cooks for a total of probably 30 to 40 minutes total. And once you take them out, you have this delicious, like, caramelized, crispy on the outside and just like really tender on the inside cauliflower steak.
Wow.
And it's delicious, and you can dress it up with just about anything. So if you're looking for a meat alternative to Thanksgiving, I highly recommend that one.
Yeah,
cauliflower steaks.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll post these recipes on our Facebook page, Lighthouse Beacon, and you can find them there in the next, you know, well, by now, probably they're there. And that'll be it. So as we kind of move forward with this feature, go ahead. If you've got recipes that you would like to upload to our Facebook page, we will be happy to share them, especially with the holidays coming up. If you've got some good holiday recipes that you want to share, let us know. We'll put them out there for you.
Yeah. All right, cool.
Yeah. And that is this week's Let Us Turn Up the Beat.
All right. Now, you know, this is the month of November.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I heard somebody say this morning, happy early Thanksgiving. I was interpreting a doctor's appointment, and the doctor said, well, happy early Thanksgiving and Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. And I was just like, I can't believe we're saying that to each other. Like, it's the time of year where we're saying that to each other now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's November, officially.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy to me. Anyway,
yeah.
I digress. Go ahead with what you're saying.
No, people are just cramming all the holidays, zipping right through them.
Right.
To get to the next year, which...
You know, I was at Target the night before Thanksgiving. Not Thanksgiving, Halloween. The night before Halloween. Still October. And they... I mean, you go into the stores and they're selling Christmas decorations already. Like, we've come to expect that. But this store actually already had their, like, giant multi-floor Christmas tree up in their store before Halloween. That was a first. I don't think I've actually seen stores decorated to the nines.
And this was a Target store?
It was not. It was a store right next to Target.
Oh, okay.
It was actually a furniture store. But yeah, they were decorated to the nines, and it wasn't even Halloween yet.
Well, you probably won't see that at Target because I don't know if I mentioned this before, but there was a group of consumers who approached Target and said, hey, we don't want to see Christmas decorations before Thanksgiving. And they said, okay.
Wow.
And so they agreed not to do that. So the Christmas creep, as it's called, is not taking place at Target stores.
I think that's very, very interesting because mm-hmm. I was thinking about the Christmas creep. I like that term. And I think there's something psychologically that if it's even October and we start like hearing Christmas music or seeing Christmas decorations, it sort of kicks us into like shopping mode. So I think that there's a psychological element that goes along like that, like an interesting social psychological experiment of human behavior is mm-hmm. like, it's almost like Pavlov's dog. Like we see the Christmas decorations and we go Christmas shopping.
Right.
So they sort of start it earlier and earlier every year to kind of stretch out that consumer shopping season.
But not at Target stores.
I will keep an eye out for that. Right. That will be interesting.
Okay. And at a certain couple of Target stores, you can find lighthouse clocks.
Yes.
Shameless plug, yes.
Shameless plug. But that's what we're here for. We're here to support our lighthouse.
Right. And you're probably asking, well, which stores, Brian? I don't Very have
good
that
question.
In front of me.
Well,
but you can go to
ChicagoLighthouse.org.
No? That's right.
Okay.
And you can find out all about how to get the Chicago Lighthouse clocks.
And we'll do you one better. We'll post the stores on our Facebook page.
There you go.
See? Mm. So you're getting so much use out of this new Facebook page.
Already.
Love it.
Finally. All right. So what's next?
coming up next. Woo! All right. Coming up next, we've got our very good friend Luke. And my very dear friend, Brian, who is Luke's going to talk to us about what's going on in his Luke's laboratory.
Well, here we are again in the deep recesses of Luke's laboratory. And Luke is here with new information on adaptive technology. So, Luke, good morning.
Good morning, Brian. Today I wanted to talk a little bit about our low vision clinic. So for those of you who don't know, we have a low vision clinic here at the Chicago Lighthouse, and we have doctors who specialize in low vision. And the idea behind the low vision clinic is that you can come and visit with our doctors, and they're going to take a look and see what your functional vision is, so what vision you have remaining, and they're going to figure out ways to best utilize that vision. Now, in terms of technology, which I work with, there's electronic technology, and that's the type of things that I talk about on this show, but there are other types of technology as well, and that type of technology is optical technology. And so rather than being electronic, it's using kind of magnifying lenses. And there's lots of different devices which the low vision doctors can show you which use different types of magnification lenses to help you. So some of the most basic, which people will be aware of already, is magnifying glasses. As in handheld, you know, magnifiers, and those you can get with a light, you can get the ones that just stand on the paper, you can get handheld ones that you can put in your bag and take around with you, and those are very useful for reading and for writing and things like that when you're out and about or if you're at home. Some of the other different types of optical devices you can get which can help, which people might not be aware of, are things like handheld telescopes. So let's say that you're out on the street and you need to see a bus number. You can hold the telescope up to your eye and you're able to see the bus number. It's magnified in the telescope. Or if there was a menu on a wall at a restaurant, you could use it to have a look at that. And so those can be really useful. You can also get things like spectacle-mounted telescopes, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's a telescope mounted onto a pair of spectacles, and you can, again, use that. You can actually get them for distance or for near, so you can use them to read with, or you can use them to watch television with, and various things like that. So those are really useful. There's also a driving aid, which is called a bioptic. And so for people who have some vision loss but still have fairly good vision, they can actually drive legally with this device called a bioptic, which is a pair of glasses with a telescope mounted at the top. And as you're driving, you are looking underneath the telescope. But when you want to see signs and things like that, you can look up into the telescope, and that will magnify the signs. And so that does require an evaluation and training and things like that, but it is a a legal aid to drive with. So that's quite exciting. And there's other devices as well. There are things called Max TV glasses, which are glasses you can put on to magnify your television to 2 times its regular size. There's very high-powered spectacles that we can do, which might help you to read. So there's a whole different array of optical devices. You might call them low-tech devices because they're, you know, not electronic. But for a lot of people, they do the job really well. And oftentimes, they can be financially easier on the wallet to afford. So I would definitely recommend that people come and visit our low vision clinic if they haven't done. Have an appointment with the doctor and see what different types of optical devices are available.
And do you know how would they make an appointment? What number would they call?
Yes. So the first thing you need to do is get a referral from your doctor. And so that would be the first step. Now, we have a specific referral form that we can actually fax to your doctor and they can fill it out and fax it back to us. So the first step would be to get in touch with us. If you call our main number, 312-666-1331, and ask to speak to the low vision clinic, then they can give you the details and take your details and get the whole process underway. And it's a case of getting that referral form filled out, and from there we would give you a call and schedule an appointment with you, and then you would come in. Now the great thing is, of course, once you've been into our low vision clinic, afterwards, if you come to our Roosevelt location, you can see me and I can show you different types of electronic technologies as well.
And you could also become
customer of the week. This week I had an excellent gentleman called Ernie who came to visit, and he had diabetic retinopathy, and his vision was still fairly good. He'd only recently started to lose some of his vision, so he was on a quest to find out what types of devices were available. I have to say it wasn't me who worked with this gentleman, although I did sit down with him for a little while. It was my colleague, Anne. And so I'm excited to say we have a new assistive technology staff member here at our Roosevelt location called Anne Kelly. And so you might have the luxury of meeting her as well if you come here. But yeah, she sat down with him and went through a bunch of different things. He was very excited to see all the different types of technology, but most excited to see the different adaptations that could be made to his phone. And so he was really excited about the range of different things that he was able to do with his smartphone. He had an iPhone that he wasn't aware even existed. Now, Anne, our new staff member, is an expert in all things Apple because she worked at the Apple Store for 12 years and she worked training people with the accessibility features. So whether it's Apple Watch, whether it's the iPhone, whether it's the Mac, whether it's the iPad, anything Apple, she knows all about it. And so if you like Ernie, want to find out more about how your phone operates or how your tablet operates or anything like that and all the different accessibility features built in, all you've got to do is give us a call. You can call me at 312-997-3649 and we could get something scheduled.
That's it for this week's edition of Luke's Laboratory. Thank you, Luke Scriven, for coming by and talking about all things adaptive technology. This is The Beacon.
The Lighthouse Endowment Campaign is an ongoing campaign to help secure the future of the Chicago Lighthouse for the 67,000-plus patients, clients, and families that utilize our services each year.
Being a veteran here, I think, has helped me. I could not see, because this is why I initially was brought here by a counselor from the VA, because like, they collaborate with each other and help us to get our vision better. When I first walked in here, I didn't know the life of a blind person. I actually didn't know. And when I came here, I walked through the door and I could see how people so, you know, they act like they could see. And it was so inspirational to me. I cried like a kid when I first got it, because I was overwhelmed to see how people can deal with blindness, you know. And the Lighthouse really, really has helped me with a lot of things, because I've learned to be more knowledgeable about computers. And they have an exercise class that they teach us how to exercise. So every fourth Friday of the month, we have a luncheon where all the seniors meet. We sit there and talk about different events and different things. And my greatest passion right now is being on the radio, reading to the blind. That's my greatest passion. I really love that. Number one is to be able to give back to people that can't see, because I was overwhelmed. And I promise God within myself that I will do this until I cannot see again. This is my greatest passion in my life.
Historically, our endowment fund has helped maintain critical programs on the verge of shutting down, preserve jobs in times of economic stress, and meet the growing demand for vision care services among America's aging population. To make a contribution, please contact Jennifer Miller, 312-997-3643.
Well, there we go. First Saturday show in the works, yes. In the books,
yeah,
on the books.
Good.
Yeah, well, first Saturday for this round anyway. Mm-hmm. So, I made my son's Halloween costume.
Right.
And I was very proud of myself for this homemade Halloween costume. Do you remember when we were little and the Halloween costumes that you'd buy at the store were like a terrible mask with holes cut out for like the eyes and where you could breathe out of? And mm-hmm. then just those awful like plastic drapes that would hang over you. Do you
I love
those?
I love the way the masks would smell after perspiration.
Perspiration and breathing into
right.
it, the saliva that kind of accumulates. Yes. Well, like store-bought Halloween costumes have really come a long way.
Mm.
And I was looking at my son, and I'm very proud of the Halloween costume I made for him, especially the shell of Tamatoa that has all the jewels and everything that Tamatoa hoards. I made all that. I like glued every single painstakingly gem and gold coin I glued on by hand. But I will tell you, next to all of the store-bought costumes, like the store-bought costumes are so fancy now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're
yeah, they
so
are.
Nice and they're so real looking, not like the plastic drapes that we had when we were kids. They're so real looking. And my son's costume, like, I got a lot of compliments on it because it was homemade and I think people appreciated that. But boy, seeing him in his little costume parade, his little kindergarten costume parade next to all of the kids with the store-bought costumes, it's like, oh, look at the boy with the homemade homemade Halloween costume on. Isn't that sweet? There was just a difference. Like, there was definitely a distinction between the homemade costume and the fancy store-bought costumes.
Yeah, well, that more people should make their own costumes, I think.
I agree. I think it's gotten too easy to just not, because the store-bought costumes are so nice. But I think part of the fun of Halloween is being unique and creative and, like, putting pieces together. I mean, I definitely would prefer homemade because it's always going to be unique,
mm-hmm.
you know, whereas the store-bought costumes, you can go to a store and there could be three kids that have the same costume and, you know, it sort of just takes away from it. But whatever. It was fine. It was great. He didn't care. He
for
got his
all
candy.
The six houses that you went to.
For all the six houses, he did get compliments and people knew who he was. So, you know, in and of itself, that to me is that's a win. I'll take it.
All right. Well, you know, earlier we were talking about the holiday creep, the Christmas creep and all those kinds of things. But before we get to that, there's Thanksgiving. And right after Thanksgiving, we have, what do they call it? The Black Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Cyber Monday.
Right.
And then there's Giving Tuesday. Well, I'd like to propose that after Thanksgiving and before, after Black Friday, that there be the Beacon Saturday. And then everybody could listen to the Beacon on Saturdays. It'd be something for you to do after you've been shopping on Black Friday.
I think that's fantastic.
Yes.
I love that idea. All right. We're going to do it, the Beacon Saturday.
All right. So everybody can get involved that way.
All right. And it's just listening to the show. Is that what it entails?
Yes. You can listen to the show and however you'd like to do it, with breakfast, without... In bed, or coughing, or not coughing.
Coughing is always optional. It's always on the table.
And all of those things.
Tell your friends.
Right. And then there is the Giving Tuesday. And
as Brian pointed out, once you've spent all your money on Black Friday and Cyber Monday, then there's Giving Tuesday.
Right.
Then there's Charity Tuesday.
Right. So all of those things. And we're going to be involved in Giving Tuesday at the Lighthouse. We ask everybody to make a contribution. But we'll talk more about that.
Well, we have to thank our friends Brett Shishkoff and Sandy Marilla for their contributions to the show this week. And always, thank you so much for tuning in on this bright and early Saturday morning. Stay warm and dry out there, and we will see you next week.